You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 22nd, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the premiere of Iraq 2, Electric Boogaloo. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Hey, Blue Gal.
You know, I do agree with Paul Krugman. I think that it's a good thing that Jeb Bush is running and that we have to have this conversation.
Yeah.
And maybe get to a little bit of truth and reconciliation about the Iraq war.
That second part's not going to happen.
I know.
And Rachel Maddow said the same thing. She said, mm-hmm. it's actually great that we're revisiting that. I don't want to relitigate the Iraq war. I just want to litigate it.
Yeah, really.
You know, because we never had this conversation. Yeah, it was really important to our media and to the entire conservative party that we never discuss anything that happened during the Bush administration at all in any depth, because they're all so fucking complicit. They're all, you know, it's a grand circle jerk and a confederacy of fellow cultists and cover-up artists. So it was really important that we never, ever talk about it. But during the time when it was not being talked about, you remember the brief aside, remember that moment in the presidential debates when Mitt Romney pulled that Barack Obama never called Benghazi a terrorist attack out of his ass.
And
you could just see, I swear to this day, the only thing that distinguished that moment, that made it memorable, was the intervention of the media.
Yep.
Was the on-site, real-time fact-checking.
Well, and it was interesting because Mitt Romney actually looked at the moderator and said, "No, what I'm saying is true."
Exactly.
And she had to correct him because he put her on the spot.
Yep. And she corrected him in real time, in public. And remember the right wing's reaction to that whole thing?
Was that she was being an interferer.
None of her business. Her business. What is she doing sticking her nose in the middle of all this?
Yep.
It wasn't, "Holy shit, you caught us in a lie," because all we do is lie. But it was, "How dare she interfere with rubbing shit in our hair?" But that moment, really, for a lot of people who have never paid attention to politics, I'm convinced, or very, very little, encapsulates the kind of bell jar, closed system insanity that just grows like kudzu, grows out of control on the right when there's no one around to cut the weeds down.
And you know, there's a listener who sends us political audiobooks on CD, and we love listening to them in the car. This week he sent us one of Robert Reich's books, so thank you very much for that. But we've been listening to Rick Perlstein's book on The Invisible Bridge about Reagan. And there really is a conspiracy within the media to prop up the Republican Party to keep that horse race coverage going forever.
Well, forever.
And the Republican Party should have been completely buried after Nixon. I mean, it just should have been gone. And instead, we got the bicentennial. We got, and I think this is really brilliant of Rick Perlstein to say, we had moments of nostalgia for the 50s with Happy Days and with American Graffiti and everyone going back and dressing like the 50s for a couple of years. And then we had the bicentennial. And that erased, that just threw all the Nixon stuff went down the rabbit hole, the memory hole after that. Because America and this renewed patriotism, which, you know, patriotism isn't bad, but waving the flag and celebrating the bicentennial just allowed for, you know, we had one term of Carter and then Reagan came back and brought back the Republican Party and Newt Gingrich came back and we're just a brand new day. It's a new day in America.
And Reagan had been specializing in lying about the past, in denying the past ever happened, that Vietnam was a mistake, that every MIA was a real American hero, that everything we did over there was justified and good and noble, and Nixon was a great and good man who was tripped up by the liberal media. He specialized in that starting in like immediately after Watergate.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Immediately. Yeah. That
he was apologizing for Watergate, and I don't mean apologizing. I mean saying that it was just a third-rate burglary that didn't make any difference all through the 70s. I mean, from day one, he didn't allow for a Republican president. He did obey Reagan's 11th commandment, never spake ill of another Republican, and he just never spoke ill of Nixon in that regard. Yeah.
And so you had one a large number of Republicans who were just like totally depressed.
Yep.
Nixon killed our party. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, can you believe we caught the president of the United States on tape of our party that we voted for twice, who won in a landslide.
Mm-hmm.
Our guy saying, you know, talking about hush money and extortion and bribing people in the White House,
mm-hmm.
over what was, you know, Watergate was the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you had this other wing of the party, which was pretty much only Ronald Reagan for a while, saying everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It never happened. And if we just cut taxes enough, we'll liberate America and free up the entrepreneurial something something, and everything will be great. And no, we've mentioned this before, none of the smart people who were living in Washington thought he would amount to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Who in their right fucking mind would buy that crazy message?
This cowboy actor, yeah.
Turns out the Republican Party bought it because they were so desperate to pretend Watergate never happened. Mm-hmm. And their part of Vietnam, their part in Vietnam of continuing and escalating a war that Nixon ran for president promising to end.
And particularly bombing Cambodia, which was just war crime. I mean, again, we're talking war crimes here.
It was war crime on top of war crime on top of war crime.
And I noticed that none of these Brooksian people, David Brooksian people who are relitigating this war in their own favor, mm-hmm. are even mentioning torture.
No.
At all.
No.
Are even mentioning that Alberto Gonzalez said, I can't recall 70 times before a committee of Congress.
Well, and you remember Peggy Noonan when Abu Ghraib came up. She said, you know, we should just sometimes a great nation just needs to walk on by.
Turn the page.
Just pretend that never happened. It was a bad thing.
This is really not helpful.
And she could just see her cringing at the thought of having to deal with reality once in her fucking drunk life.
Yep.
And her advice was deny it. Pretend it's not there. Just make it go.
Let's move on because really, this isn't what America's about.
And so when you allow the pond scum to the dumpster of the Republican Party to just rot and grow and an entire ecosystem of insanity to grow out of control in this, you know, muddy, fetid swamp of paranoia, bigotry, and denialism, what you get is and you let that become a legitimate party with a legitimate point of view, with its own media and its own church and its own radio and its own publishing house, and you treat it respectfully. Instead of wanting to burn it to the ground, which is what it desperately needs, you end up with people like Mitt Romney believing what they hear from the Republican crazy machine and quoting it as fact. And then the only time he got slapped down for that was when he was on stage in public with a fact checker right there.
Yep.
If that hadn't happened, that moment would have passed because it was just he said, she said. You know, Romney said one thing, Obama said another. Who's to say who's right or who's wrong? And that would have been the story on Meet the Press and This Week, et cetera. Nobody talked about Iraq after the Bush administration collapsed. The worst anybody ever said was David Brooks saying, essentially, it was a noble and great idea. I still believe in the Iraq project. It was the greatest thing any great power has ever attempted, he said in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
But Don Rumsfeld fucked it up.
Yeah,
that's the only problem. He mismanaged this war. He didn't understand the least culture, and that's what went wrong. So you've been allowing a completely insane version of reality to grow unchecked in the GOP dumpster for a decade now because nobody wants to talk about it, because nobody in the mainstream media, none of the complicit assholes who still have their jobs in the mainstream media want to talk about it, because then we'd start pointing fingers. And then we start saying, well, where the hell were you, David Gregory? Well, what about you, Chuck Todd? All the complicit assholes who are now part of the media establishment would start to lose their jobs. And that's never
Well, for two reasons. One is war is very good for ratings.
Yep.
And for another, these networks are all in bed on Wall Street with defense contractors.
Yes, they are.
So
absolutely are.
I've been on Twitter all week saying, you know, I'm going to ask you a non-Iraq question, Jeb Bush. Your sponsors, how are their war stocks doing? Yeah. And it turns out their war stocks are doing really well since ISIS came on the
scene. They're doing great. They're doing,
And who does John McCain work for? He works for Northrop Grumman and Boeing and Raytheon and these big corporations whose stock prices are up over 100% since March of this year.
He's doing great.
That's my research for the week. And
it's great. It's good news for John McCain.
It's good news for John McCain and his friends who are funding his life. The person that got caught in the same trap that Mitt Romney did.
Yes.
And it's only because of bloggers pointing this out. Mm-hmm. John Kasich. Who isn't also ran, you know, I hope you're excited about this Kasich momentum that's coming.
Yeah, I feel it.
But John Kasich got the memos on how you're supposed to talk about Iraq, but they've come too close together. The last month's memo said, did I say that right? Last month's memo?
Yes.
Said, don't relitigate Iraq out of respect for the troops.
Right.
And remember, that's what Jeb said,
right?
And he said, most of them were men.
Yeah.
But, you know, the men and women in uniform, we don't want to relitigate the war out of respect for the troops who fought. And that fell flat. That did not poll well. And by the way, Carolee has pointed out that these guys are absolutely running their campaigns only by polls of Republican voters.
Right.
And they will change with the wind if something doesn't poll well.
Mm-hmm.
So this, for the sake of the troops, we're not going to talk about Iraq. Well, duh. You know, how many troops died in Iraq because of these lies? And we have to talk about it because of the troops. So that fell flat. So the new memo this month that came out was, the Iraq war was bungled from the beginning. So, no, knowing what I know now, I would never have gone in there. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that's going to pull better because at least it's an admission that I wouldn't make those same mistakes, quote unquote.
Sure.
And so last month it was, we aren't going to say that this was a bad idea because it would disparage the troops.
Sure.
This month is, fuck the troops. That doesn't pull well. I have to say that this was bad.
It was poorly administered.
Uh-huh.
It was a noble cause that was poorly administered. And I would like us to dwell on this. And this is my personal bias and my personal belief that I think I have documented ad nauseum on my blog and talked about here. Mm-hmm. David Brooks, among many, many others, is engaged in a long-range project to completely wipe out the last 30 years of conservative history.
Mm-hmm.
I think I proved that beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Right.
So imagine my surprise when Think Progress runs an article. It looks like David Brooks is rewriting the history of Iraq. Well, of course he is.
Of course he is. That's his job.
That's chapter 7 of a 30-chapter book that he's been working on. But the Iraq lie is the headwater lie. It's the linchpin lie.
Yeah.
It's the big lie that lets all the other little lies live on. And that's why David Brooks interrupted his Scold America tour, his lecture, cross-country barnstorming tour on morality and humility and reticence, to write an article in the New York Times about how there was never any lying in Iraq. Nobody lied. That's just crazy talk. That's just a fable that liberals invented. No. It was a good idea. It was poorly administered. We have to understand the history of
faulty intelligence. Yeah. Yes.
That passively showed up on George Bush's desk and nobody knows who put it there. We think the cleaning lady left a bag of faulty intelligence on his desk and he was just bamboozled by it. And it was such a flagrantly transparent lie to cover his cowardly neocon ass that Paul Krugman rebutted it the day before. And pretty much everybody else on the left rebutted it the day after. And he pulled some report. The Robb Report he says that anyone even passingly familiar with the Robb Report knows from 2005 knows that there was never any intelligence fault. There was never any hint of this intelligence being cooked. And then people who actually read the thing said, yeah, you're right, because that report was specifically chartered not to ask questions about whether or not the Bush administration lied.
Because the Bush administration said, don't ask those questions.
Don't ask those questions.
Right.
And all the subsequent reports, including the CIA directly, said, oh, yeah, no, they just made this shit up. They just made this shit up. And of course, that part of history is very inconvenient for someone who made their career lying about Iraq. So according to David Brooks, that simply never happened. It didn't exist. And that's the thing. The Iraq lie was allowed to stand. And that permitted the news media and the conservatives to say, oh, shit, you mean we're not going to get called on this? Well, fuck, let's lie about everything. Because nobody's going to call us on anything. Let's just, hey, what about birth certificate? Let's make that shit up. Hey, about Benghazi? That, make that shit up. Well, people might compare Benghazi with Iraq. Iraq never happened, so no problem. It was the giant lie of just pretending that the past never happened. The Tea Party sprang into existence overnight based on righteous patriotism of people who'd never been involved in politics before. All those lies that we've been writing about for 10 years, they all come back to Iraq. That's why that's the hill that people like David Brooks have to die on. Because if anybody starts pushing back hard and making him look stupid and making his cabal of neocon war pimps own what they did, the whole fucking scam falls apart. So that's the one they have to defend at every cost. And that's why what happened, God bless Jeb Bush, is he cracked open that dumpster.
By being there. I mean, his presence has, you have to crack open that dumpster.
And out of it crawled all the lies that have been allowed to fester unchallenged in the wingnut media and in crazy Uncle Liberty's brain like maggots for the last 10 years. So,
well, and it's really interesting to watch in real time them scramble for a lie that will work.
Yes.
And that's what they're doing.
The one thing they cannot permit is the truth. And so what you had this week was, you had a spectrum of opinions, all of which were horribly wrong, and all of which were engineered to do the same thing, mm-hmm. which is, please, for fuck's sake, stop asking about Iraq. Stop holding me to account for what I said.
Don't mention the war.
So on one end of the, on part of the spectrum, you had David Brooks just saying it was a terrible mistake based on faulty intelligence. Nobody's to blame, and anybody who says otherwise is a liar. Mm-hmm. Then you had Bill Kristol saying the invasion of Iraq was great. Everything went fine. We left Barack Obama a peaceful country, and he fucked it all up because he's a liberal. And then you had this asshole in The Week magazine.
Oh, my God. And this is taking it to a new level.
Yeah.
It really is.
But this is a perfect example of what I've been saying for 10 years. Once you let both siderism become your vocabulary, once you start singing out of David Brooks's hymn book, this is what the world sounds like. You will never find the Republican atrocity so awful that some asshole won't say, but the liberals.
And this article, go ahead and refer to it. It's in The Week.
The Week.
Which started in Britain as sort of what they called a center-right publication. Mm-hmm. And the article is about how liberals have created a myth about Iraq.
Right.
Right?
Right. It really is. And I wrote a post about this. And it really is. If there's one thing worse than a cabal of neocon scumbags lying us into the wrong war, it's a bunch of liberals making up this fantasy that there were a bunch of neocons who scumbags who lied us into a war. And the first part of the article is, you know, it was pretty terrible. Everybody knows it was a mistake. Blah, blah, blah. It was just, you know, horrific. I can't imagine why anybody would still defend this incredibly dumb thing. But you know what's worse than that? You know what's even worse than that?
Hippies.
All these liberals inventing this conspiracy that people lied about the intelligence and did this all on purpose. That's even worse than going to war.
And he never mentions the project for a new American century, does he?
Never mentions the fuck. What, you know who he does mention? David Brooks.
Yeah.
You know, David Brooks wrote in the New York Times that it's a fable. And he's right. David Brooks is right. And the last line of the article is, if only both parties would stop making these things up about the Iraq War. And I want people like that set on fire.
Yep. All right. So I'm going to talk for a minute. I've been taking notes as you've been talking.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me now that the Republican Party can hide Medicare cuts in the TPP bill.
Uh-huh.
And of course they can. Because this goes right along with having a constituency that you can lie to.
Mm-hmm.
And any Medicare cuts that come along, they can cut Medicare forever now because Obamacare.
Right.
They can just blame Obamacare for it. They've been lying for so long. And the tribe that rubs shit in its hair knows that everything is Obama's fault. There is a default position, except, you know, Lewis Lange changed his mind. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But they put Medicare cuts to payments to hospitals in the Trans-Pacific Partnership bill. Not as a poison pill, but because they can.
Yeah.
And it's not governing. It is a philosophy and a cult of let's just starve the beast. And every opportunity we can, we're going to starve the beast of the government.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. Number two, David Brooks. I just want to go back for a second and touch on his whole, because I did hear him this week talking about poverty again.
Wait a minute. I want to get this straight. You want to go back and talk about David Brooks?
Just for a second.
Okay. All right. I'm with you.
Poverty. And he was talking, maybe it was on PBS last Friday, about government dependency and how it's his old line of if poor people would make more moral choices, they would be better off financially.
Sure.
And what I found fascinating about this week is we have a perfect example of the underclass learning to behave in a moral manner and take care of their families, have self-respect, dress like professional people, and hold their heads up high and be good, devoted, and I do mean African-American men being good fathers and good stewards and good citizens and building a community in a moral manner.
Yep.
And they had a leader named Malcolm X.
Yep.
Who was shot to death by the white FBI.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
White FBI and the Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
He pissed both of them off mortally. Yep. Yeah.
Mortally. Yes. And, but he also taught, a philosophy of self-respect and take care of your families and do the right thing, you know, that is such a threat to the David Brookses of this world.
Yes.
If you have a black man with self-respect who, I take care of my family. And guess what? Poverty and structural inequality is still a problem.
Uh-huh.
Let's fix that together. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
It's not about your morals anymore. It's about my responsibility for what society looks like.
A strong, smart black man who dresses like you, who has equal status to you, who will look you in the eye and call you a liar, is David Brooks' worst
nightmare. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
finally, my last point, just based on everything you've been talking about.
Yeah.
Fox News is going to decide who is on stage at the first debate August. Because the RNC doesn't want that responsibility. The RNC doesn't want a lot of responsibility has ceded all of that to Roger Ailes for over a decade.
They've privatized it, honey.
Yeah. That's it. They've privatized the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And it's now run out of Roger Ailes' office.
Yeah.
I'm going to be really interested to see how Roger Ailes cooks the polls so that at least Carly Fiorina can be on the stage.
Sure. Well, you got to have her.
Yeah.
You know.
And I don't know. I don't know about Ben Carson or not. I don't know how that's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a real reason to keep Donald Trump off the stage. I get that.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating to see on August 6th, which is when the first debate is with Fox News, how they managed to get Carly Fiorina on that stage.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll find a way. I'm sure they will.
Sure they will.
My cousin had some notes on Facebook about MSNBC.
Right.
And I did paste those in here. I know I did.
And for those of you
scrolling up and down. Oh, here we go.
For those of you interested in my opinion, you can check out driftglassblogspot.com, MSNBC assisted suicide watch.
Yeah, and I sent that to my cousin because I said, you have to read this if you want to talk about MSNBC. And to his credit, Chris Hayes did a wonderful segment this week on Malcolm X. So it is possible to do this. But first of all, Joe Scarborough, I mean, I can't even, in the words of my 12-year-old, I can't even.
Yeah.
My cousin said that the death of MSNBC is, since Comcast came on.
Yeah.
There he had a list of things. My cousin had a list of things that happened to MSNBC, and I just wanted to mention a couple of them. One is to promote a low-budget, civically irresponsible fetish for politics as opposed to civics. And you can, I know there are some listeners who don't want us to talk about Chris Hayes on the weekend as opposed to Steve Kornacki on the weekend, right. But that's the difference. The civics lessons that came out of Chris Hayes' show as opposed to New Jersey Sunday with, you know, how is this affecting Chris Christie every single Sunday for a full one or two full segments on that every weekend.
Followed by, how's this affecting Hillary? What's Jeff up to? With a panel that looks like the junior class version of MSNBC, of Meet the Press. It is just a clone of the horrible thing, the horrible monster that Meet the Press has become, stamped out for cable viewers on the weekends. That's all it is. And if you like
that sort of thing, and we have to treat every issue as a political drama and have no explanation of any context of anything that is actually behind these issues. It's just, how does it affect Hillary? Yes.
We must have someone from the American Enterprise Institute or the Heartland Institute or some other fucking crazy-ass right-wing quote-unquote think tank on for balance. And Steve Kornacki has to remain agnostic when someone lies to his face because he wants that job, man. So that's the deal. That's the contract.
And then the other thing my cousin said was that MSNBC headquarters has a naive belief that you can earn the loyalty of viewers by hiring any popular figure of the same age or skin color.
Yeah.
Or gender. I would add gender.
Yeah.
And then the mystifying love affair. And my cousin calls him Joe Scarborough-ish. I like that.
Yeah.
which is just stunning to me that he's still on the air. But you know who we've been talking about this week, Driftglass? You won't believe it. I thought we were going to go on forever not talking about Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, I know. Bill O'Reilly watch, or the lack of Bill O'Reilly watch. Can I add one more thing?
Yeah.
To the David Brooks issue.
Yes.
I don't want to detour us there too long, but there was a tiny window into the soul of the neoconservative, who depends 100% for his sustenance on the maintenance of a phenomenally awful lie in the public sphere so he can go on selling books about morality and character, which is hilarious, which is the biggest joke I can think of. But he and fellow neoconservative war pimp Jeffrey Goldberg were at this Aspen Institute idea thing.
Which is Davos Light, USA, right?
But it's David Brooks being interviewed, quote-unquote, by Jeffrey Goldberg, who was, if anything, an even bigger war pimp than David Brooks, about his book on character and morality. And they've known each other for years, and they're, you know, they're in the same camp, and they are both deeply complicit in what went on up in the run-up to Iraq. And so Jeffrey Goldberg asked him this question about, you know, you say in your book that every now and then you have to take on an issue that hurts you personally, that hurts you professionally, that you have
hurts
to
your resume.
Hurts your resume.
Yep.
And he asked him, what about you, David? When is the time in your life when you told the truth and it hurt you? And David Brooks really didn't want to answer that question. And he, you know, do you live up to this book? And David Brooks says no. But he really pressed him on it. And the example David Brooks came up with, and I transcribed this just so I'd get it right, is, I mean, this is something we did, and he gestured to his friend Jeffrey, a couple of years ago, when the Iraq war went bad. I wrote a series of columns about what I got wrong. No, he didn't.
There aren't anywhere.
He wrote several grudging columns about how badly he misjudged Donald Rumsfeld's competence to administer the slaughter that he still believed in.
Yeah.
But at no point did he say mea culpa. He just said, oh, you know, poorly administered, noble idea. And through clenched teeth, and let's fucking move on now because I don't want to talk about this anymore. But what he found, this is the lesson that the king of character and the high priest of morality.
Of humility and morality.
This is what he learned. What I found in that exercise, because it was just an exercise, when other people die, it's just an exercise, was that your friends are really mad at you. And the people who oppose the war are even madder. They sense weakness and they pounce on you. And, you know, because there's two camps of people. There are your friends, and they're the people who opposed the war, which is still true. But Jeffrey Goldberg leaps in with, you don't get rewarded for telling that kind of truth necessarily in the public arena. And David Brooks just shakes his head. Now I understand why politicians never admit error, because the people who disagree with you just sense vulnerability. And then he talks about how sleepless it was for the weeks leading up to those columns, because, you know, he was wrestling with his soul. And he told the truth and it hurt him. And that's my example. Those mean anti-war protesters wouldn't let it go. Yeah, because you fucking slandered us for the better part of 4 years at the Weekly Standard. And then you got a job from slandering us and calling us myopic and crazy and deranged and stupid and anti-Semitic at the New York Times.
You got the best job in the world.
Along with your buddy Bill Kristol. And then when somebody, and this is the video that I keep pushing and nobody's interested in watching, when someone actually asked you point blank in a public arena, what about all those people you slandered during the Iraq War?
And here I have a clipping of you doing that.
This is in my hands. And here you are at a lecture on Reinhold Niebuhr on morality and reticence and humility in the pulpit. What do you say to people, those people that you slandered, that ridiculed during the run-up to the war? And he said, I don't think I ever ridiculed anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's fucking move on. And it's that level of just, I'm not going to answer this question. And what David Brooks knows for a fact is that none of his colleagues will ever watch that video. If they do, they will never call him out on any of the lies he's told, because if he goes down, they all go down.
Yep.
So they are absolutely financially dependent on the lie he helped create. And that's why it's never going to go away. That's why you have to take down the center if you want to get the conservative right. Because the center is their enabler. The center is the shield that covers up their lies, because they're mutually dependent on each other.
But they're gonna continue to cover up their lies because they like shopping at Barney's in Manhattan.
They do.
And they like going to cocktail parties in Georgetown. And so it is a mutual protection society that allows, I keep calling them the Beltway Blackberry class, but that's what they are. And they protect each other. So,
and speaking of people who are protected by the Beltway, Bill O'Reilly. Yeah.
And you're right. These court documents that show that he dragged his wife down the stairs. I asked you this morning, based on your experience with angry drunk Irishman over the course of your lifetime.
I have a few.
What are the odds that Bill O'Reilly was drunk when he dragged his wife by the neck down the stairs? And you said 50-50. And I thought, what?
Yeah, well,
explain why it's 50-50 that he might not even be drunk.
Because some people are drunk on anger.
Yeah.
Some people are belligerent by nature, by design. Bill O'Reilly is a bully and an asshole on purpose. Remember that, you know, we're doing it live rant that he went on that everybody, that's Bill O'Reilly. Yeah. He has no control over his temper, and he was hired by Roger Ailes to be a thug. He's been paid all these years to be a moralizing Irish bigot who's also a thug, who talks about family values. And anybody who gets in his way, he'll punch their own fucking lights out. He's had told people to leave the theater or he'll tear them apart. Yeah. You know, he terrorizes people who work for him because they know he's right under the surface is this boiling rage machine, which has been encouraged, you know? And so, surprise, surprise, his wife crossed him and he dragged her down the stairs in front of his daughter and paid to have it covered up. And now it comes out.
Well, it's not going to, and you said, it's not going to make a bit of difference.
Not a bit of difference.
His ratings are higher than the stairs he dragged his wife down by the neck. You know, that's it. It's all about ratings. And that's a shame. That's just...
But that's
Fox
world,
News.
That is the world we live in, because it is 100% predictable that unless this is one of those scandals that makes Roger Ailes look bad, Bill O'Reilly might have to go on a vacation, he might have to take a hiatus, he might have to go away somewhere. But he is the beloved Irish thug of millions and millions of old white bigots who he tells exactly what they want to hear every fucking day. And he ain't going anywhere. But you know who might be fired soon? George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I just wanted to add that Ray Rice had this just today.
Uh-huh.
The domestic violence charges were dismissed against Ray Rice. Because football. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the world we live in where powerful men get to do what they want and get away with it.
Yep.
And George Stephanopoulos is in trouble because we have to believe that the Clinton Global Initiative is a corrupting super PAC rather than a charity.
It's a massive cash scam. It's a massive. It's like Newt Gingrich with a bunch of zeros added after his name. It is a massive scam that's designed exclusively to funnel money from corrupt foreign governments into the Clintons' pockets for nefarious reasons. That's the only thing it is. Now, that is completely untrue, but that is, you know, right-wing lie number 100,000.
It's like I mentioned a couple weeks ago about National Review Online finally coming down to writing an article about what would push Hillary off the ticket.
Exactly. Because
they cannot have Hillary Clinton be anything but devil woman.
Right.
You know, she's got to be satanic, just like Obama has to be a Kenyan usurper Muslim.
Mm-hmm. And we
even and if that doesn't work, then Reverend Wright as you know, one reporter said to a woman who said, "Well, Reverend Wright and he's a Muslim." He said, "No, you can't have both of those at the same time." And she said, "Oh, come on." You know, just looked at that reporter and said, "Oh, come on." You know, because he has to be evil. Mm-hmm. He has to have all of the evils attached to him.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether they're consistent or not.
Right. Well,
and it's the same with Hillary.
And that's because Roger Ailes runs the world.
Yeah.
And Roger Ailes, I mean, by name, I'll say Roger Ailes, but Roger Ailes and Rush Limbaugh and the right-wing media can push the mainstream media around and kick them in the balls whenever they want. And what the mainstream media does is cower in the corner and beg them to stop. Please, whatever you want, just don't hurt us because we're making so much fucking money over here. We won't cause any trouble. We won't ask any questions. Just please stop screaming at us. We'll put your idiots and assholes. We'll put your lies on the air. We'll put Michelle Malkin on, for God's sakes. We'll put Bill Kristol. We'll give him a steady job at ABC News. Just please, please, please stop yelling at us because we're making a lot of money on this fantasy that we're the objective journalists. So what happens? So you let that run for 10 years. What happens? Brian Williams gets effectively fired for making shit up, and good for him. Bill O'Reilly is celebrated for making up much worse shit and completely protected by Roger Ailes. So here comes George Stephanopoulos. Now, what has George Stephanopoulos got to do with anything? Well, ABC News just re-upped his contract for $105 million.
Mm-hmm.
They're betting their entire network basically on George Stephanopoulos. So it turns out he gave 50 to 75K to the Clinton Global Initiative, which is the latest paranoid scandal on the right. So what happens? You marshal the entire army, the entire Uruk-hai army, the entire orc army on the right, and begin screaming about Benghazi. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean Benghazi. Birth certificate. No, I didn't mean that. Clinton Global Initiative, CGI. It's worse than the IRS scandal, Blue Gal. It might
even though Mitt Romney gave a speech for the Clinton Global Initiative, and you know, a lot of conservatives, including the guy at Newsmax, have given money to CGI because they want to help Haiti.
Yeah,
and no one mentions that Rupert Murdoch held a fundraiser for Senator Hillary Clinton's campaign in New York City.
No, none of that, or that Sheldon Adelson writes these people checks for hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yep.
That's just politics. That's something else entirely. So Stephanopoulos gives what to him is a couple of days' pay, a week's pay, to a charity he believes in, run by a guy he used to work for. That is the worst scandal that has ever happened in America, and he's now have to apologize two or three times. And conservatives know they've got ABC by the balls. First of all, they've already hired Bill Kristol, so that's exciting news. But they know. The right wing knows that ABC has bet the farm on George Stephanopoulos, and if they can just terrorize the hell out of him, make that investment look like a rotten idea. If they can just freak them out enough, they can demand things. They can hold that network hostage and demand terms. Okay, you put Bill Kristol on the air, Laura Ingraham on the air. What about Rush Limbaugh half hour? You know,
whoever Regnery Press has a new book out,
yeah.
You know, or Mary Madeline has published in her conservative imprint.
We'll put them
on. You have to have them on Sunday.
And we're sick of this liberal bias at ABC. So here's what you're going to do. And that's how, because our media is so complicit and so cowardly, and because they are hiding under the same sheltering lie about Iraq and everything else that Rush Limbaugh is hiding under proudly and that Roger Ailes is hiding under proudly and that protects all the rest of them. They know that if the right turns on them and pushes them out into the open, into the sunlight, they will disintegrate. They need the protection. They need the right to be quiet and let them get away with ripping off the rest of the country. So they will give them anything they want to shut up, except George Stephanopoulos, who they've just invested a shit ton of money in. So that's why Stephanopoulos is in trouble. Because Roger Ailes can kick ABC in the balls, and ABC doesn't have the balls to kick back. They're just going to beg him to stop and ask him how much it's going to cost. That's all. That's how your media works.
Drift Class, it's time for Bible Bitch.
Yes, it is.
Bible Bitch.
That's not scriptural.
Sure is.
And because all of this, as we talk, just starts to agitate me. And I want to take a step back for a minute because I never want our show to become a rage machine.
No.
It's not. We're not trying to just rage against the right. We're trying to provide, as my cousin said, civics lessons.
Yeah.
And ways that we as citizens can make a difference. I'm really proud of all of the liberals who took the time to write a note on South Carolina Blind Guy's GoFundMe page about Obamacare and how it works and what we as liberals want in terms of health care.
Uh-huh.
And they did convince him that his governor stopped Medicaid from happening in his state and that that's her fault. Patiently. And it makes me a little miserable because apparently all it takes is 700 people posting messages with $10 contributions to your health care to change the mind of a conservative.
Yeah. After you've been...
So we have to do that with each individual Fox News viewer?
Well,
we have to send all of them $26,000?
Well, only after they have been abandoned. Only after their party's ideology has run over. You know how they... my karma ran over my dogma?
Yeah.
Only after all of the right-wing insanity they have been jerking off to for 30 years actually lands on them like a ton of bricks and actually threatens their life or their family or their future. At that moment of weakness, that's when you can walk up and we fucking told you. Told you. And that's why, you know, I talk a lot about Sister Fuck Arkansas.
Yeah.
But it has a sister city, and that's Schadenfreude, South Carolina. You know, and I'm glad.
And Lewis Lang lives there.
He does.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's going to get his eyes fixed. I'm glad that he has seen the light, even though it required bribery and threats to his life from a lack of medical attention, great personal suffering. I don't believe in making people suffer to see my point of view. I think they should just see reason. But for whatever reason, we now know the price tag for converting a single conservative.
And so I posted to Open Thread this week at Crooks and Liars a quotation from Buddha. I know that that's going to be an anathema to certain Bible purists.
Buddha bitch.
But Buddha bitch this week. Well, I'm Buddha bitch. I'm also going to be Bible bitch. I think Jesus would agree with Buddha on this one. Three things cannot be long hidden: the sun, the moon, and the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one that anyone who's familiar with the Bible in any way is probably familiar with this quote. And I'm going to read it from the King James Version first because it is so recognizable. This is from Psalm 46. Be still and know that I am God. Mm-hmm. And I need to do that from time to time. I told people at Crooks and Liars, look, I'm getting to the point where I can't open my forums tab. When I get to that point of knowing, because that's where we announce what we're writing about. You know, oh, I'm going to write about John Kasich said this, and I'm going to write about Laura Ingraham saying that. And it got to the point where someone mentioned hot air, and I just went, I'm losing it.
Yeah. Yep.
You just, my cup overflowed with all of the muck that we're dealing with in the right-wing media. And I said, I just have to step away for a minute and be still.
Yeah.
And so the King James Version says, be still and know that I am God. The Message, which is the version that I usually quote from, the Bible in modern language.
It says, shut up on God? Yeah.
No, that would be good.
Yeah.
It says, step out of the traffic.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
That's a much better one.
Step out of the traffic.
Yeah.
Take a long, loving look at me, your high God, above politics, above everything.
Mm-hmm.
I love how Lewis Lang said, I never wanted this to be political.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the moment when you realize it. And that's the Lewis Lang moment. That's yep. Crazy Uncle Liberty's moment. We have, for example, this is Lewis Lang, but it's also the Mitt Romney moment at the presidential debates. We have a letter from a listener whose spouse is a Rush Limbaugh aficionado, shall we say.
Yep. And I have posted that letter on Facebook, and a lot of people have responded on our Facebook page to this person. I'm keeping everything about this person secret.
Yeah.
They are married to it, and it's
also,
hard.
Well, it's also people you know in life, and it's also people I have in my family or I am familiar with personally, and you as well, who don't understand that their madness and paranoia and rage and stupidity is their default setting.
Yeah.
It's absolutely their baseline vocabulary. They open their mouths and out comes the crazy because the only people they ever hear from are people who reflect that back to them. They think that's normal. They think calling Barack Obama an N-word or Kenyan or a traitor or who sucks up to foreign powers and wants to destroy America or whatever is just normal, polite conversation, everyday conversation. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Lewis Lang didn't realize that cutting off health care for poor people, that gutting social safety nets was A, the dogma of his cult, and B, nothing but political.
Yes.
Is just devastating to have that confirmed. It's so obvious, and he'd never noticed it because the woman who was interviewed by Lawrence O'Donnell about Iraq that we refer to over and over again, who just didn't understand, who was never involved in politics before Barack Obama.
Right.
Because having a white Christian conservative man as president is just normal.
And having a war going on is just normal, she said. I don't pay attention because we're always in some sort of conflict.
Back to step out of the traffic, I would like to quote from someone who had a life that was much harder than anybody I know. Mm-hmm. Who was quoting? He was quoting William Cullen Bryant, who's a poet, but Martin Luther King. Truth crushed to earth shall rise again. It won't go away. It doesn't matter how deep the denial is or how desperate the situation is. The truth itself will come back, and it will avenge itself on us in some very unpleasant ways. We are simply documenting, very much like the early days of the Iraq War. I wrote a long post when Tom Friedman suddenly discovered the Iraq War was going wrong and was pissed that no one would talk about it. The left and the right, nobody wants to talk about what's going on in the Iraq War. Isn't it a tragedy that both the left and the right refuse to discuss the Iraq War? Only the sensible center seems to be interested in having an intelligent conversation. No, we've been talking about it all along. You just didn't want to listen. And that's what it feels like here. We're not gloating over the fact that the system is fucked up. We are telling you, Holy Mother of God, this has to be fixed. And the day will come when the system will crash or something will break or something will be so horrible that there'll be a million Lewis Langs out there.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you on that day, David Brooks will write a column about how isn't it unfortunate that the liberals are gloating over the fact, whatever. But, they were wrong about so many other things.
They bank on human suffering. Well, and we saw that happen in 2008. There was a bright, shining moment when the banks were going to fail.
Yes.
And David Brooks and all his friends were going to lose a lot.
Uh-huh.
And that's when Newsweek magazine publishes a cover story that says, we're all socialists now.
Yep.
I have it up on my wall because I knew that as soon as the banks were stable, we were going to have austerity spending.
Right.
Because exactly. It's not going to, we don't give a shit about Main Street.
No.
We only care about rich people and our rich friends, and we're going to make sure that crisis ends.
Pairing nicely with that, David Brooks was horribly wrong about the Iraq War and lied about it, but he was also horribly wrong about the Bush economic policies. he said, you know, we can have $2 trillion in tax cuts, and we can have Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and
never going to have deficits again. Yeah.
And the minute the system crashed, his answer was, well, we have to have austerity.
Yeah.
He was against the problem is spending.
Yeah.
He was against the bailout of the auto industry. And the minute his rosy economic jerk-off fantasies fell apart, the answer wasn't like, oh, God, I got that wrong. The answer was, well, we have to take somebody's Social Security away from him, I guess.
Yeah.
We have to start cutting back on stuff.
We need a grand bargain.
You know?
We need a grand bargain to fix what's going on. Yeah.
To fix what I broke.
And now we can cut Medicare and hide it in a trade bill. And no one will notice. No one in our constituency will notice because, first of all, we're gerrymandered beyond all saving.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, our constituents only listen to one side of the media that will tell them that it's all the black guy's fault.
Well, and you know, and, if only they were more moral, they wouldn't need all those giveaways from the government.
Grandma needs giveaways from the government when she's 80 years old and can't change her own diaper.
Well, if it's your grandma, fuck you. If it's my grandma, that's what government should be doing.
You know, we didn't mention the White Rebel Motorcycle Club at all.
No.
Allowing guns to be taken into a bar, what could go wrong? I retweeted a couple of people who compared this to Baltimore. It's not an exact comparison in any regard, but the police side with white men.
Yeah.
And that's just true. Yeah. And we do need those comparisons to point that out.
Well, it's the vocabulary that's so interesting.
Yeah.
When it's what's his name? When it's Cliven Bundy, on his ranch, waving his guns around with his militia buddies, talking about the tyranny. The tyrant's coming down here trying to make me pay taxes on the shit I've been ripping the government off for 30 years, those bastards. Suddenly, he's surrounded by a bunch of these kind of fucking clowns, armed white morons, who think that the government's out to get them, these militia idiots with their open carry theories. And the solution at that moment for law enforcement was back off. Back off. You know, hey, we don't want to start nothing. No, dude. And it's because the evil government's coming to get my shit. Let one black man show up in a town square with loose cigarettes or nothing and get choked down or shot down by a cop. And, well,
and killed.
You know,
and killed.
You have to respect law enforcement. You got to respect law enforcement. I mean, you know, what do you expect? You probably mouthed off to the nice cop there, and that's why you man, and your dad, your family probably.
And the
sucks.
Cops are victims in that situation.
And watching that. Vocabulary.
And the word thug reserved for black people. Yeah.
Well, and thuggy is actually an Indian term, but we won't go into that now. It involves strangulation. That's all I'm going to say. Mm. But watching the flip, the racist flip of the vocabulary happen in real time and watching the people who are doing it in real time just not even notice. We're talking about white people. It's, you know, respect for authority, you know, open carry, stand your ground. The government is the problem. You know, the jackbooted authority of the government coming down to take my shit away. Make it about a black person. And suddenly it's, how dare you not respond? What did you do to make that nice cop throw you to the ground and frisk you or shoot you?
How did you threaten him?
Yeah.
All right. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week we have two internet kitties. They are Peep and Bella. Peep and Bella will pose for photos if they have a sunny spot to sit in because that's their good light. Go visit them at our Facebook page and website. They are adorable. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you, and we've heard from a lot of people. Thank you, all the kind words. And we've heard from lots of atheist agnostics and angry Catholics about liking Bible Bitch, and we appreciate that. And you take it and spoon it up however you like, because it's yours.
Yep.
There's no right way or wrong way to adopt this stuff. The Bible is there for everybody to reflect upon and use or reject
as you choose.
I don't use it as a literal translation of God's will in any way.
No.
Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And did you know, Driftglass, we do have one listener that owns an iWatch?
Yes.
We heard from him.
Yes.
He is a gadget junkie. He does not wear it as a status symbol.
Yeah.
But he's one of these first adopters that she said, don't hate me. You know, Steve, we don't hate you.
We don't hate you at all. No, believe me, I worked with these people when I was a technology and art person in Chicago. And these are the people who were slinging Newtons around. Always had a Google Glass when they came out. Always had everything first because you have to. How can you not?
You have to try it. You have to see how it works and do it.
You know those little talking Christmas trees and those Billy Basses? They were hacking the sound chips on those and lots of really foul language. So when they weren't fixing computers or et cetera. So I have nothing but love and respect for my gadget junkie pals. I just wish I had the scratch to, you know, continue to buy those things. But one day I will.
If you bought an iWatch, I wouldn't let it in the house. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No. They're not cool. I think, what did you say? We were watching the Mad Men finale and there was that iWatch ad and you said, stop trying to make iWatch happen. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. That has become one of our, both your daughters, favorite catchphrase from Mean Girls.
Yes.
Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
And you can insert anything in there.
Yep.
Stop trying to make bath time happen. It's not going to happen. It's Friday night. I don't have to go to bed. All right. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. By the way, including Steve, the iWatch guy.
Yeah, no.
He didn't send us $10,000, but he's very generous with his contribution. Yeah. We appreciate that.
Really do.
You can support our podcast, too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on your iWatch.
This is what we get for drinking before the show, Blue Guy.
No. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Guy, the Internet Kitties look forward to Jeb kicking off his campaign from that grand square in Baghdad that's named after President Bush.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dubbing. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University, once again, courtesy of Dogfaced Herman. He writes, here's another set of clips brought to you by a science fiction consuming liberal that lives within walking distance of a sheep farm.
Oh, jeez.
I'm either your best friend or your worst enemy. Guess we'll have to wait until the third act to know for sure.
Yeah.
All right. He's got five clips here.
Okay.
And they are celebrities in movies.
Okay.
That you might not expect to be in these kind of movies. These are horror or science fiction horror kind of genre B movies. And I think you might guess some of them. You might surprise me and guess some of them. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, I'm not a horror movie B movie.
No, that's the point. I mean, you might recognize these voices anyway. We'll see.
Gotcha.
See
how it goes. It's What's My Line?
Yeah. I doubt you will know any of these movies. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
But
all right.
You're supposed to guess the movie and actor. So see if you can recognize the voice.
Okay.
And then we'll swing it on the movie.
All right. Cool.
Number one.
Accounting for the DH factor of drift, we've progressed 75 million miles toward Mars and are passing through perihelion to the sun. Mars is giving off a red coloring and is becoming more vivid as we approach. It suggests that there is a really deep oxidation of the planet's major substance. How does that sound for the ship's log, sir?
Very good.
Oh, yeah. I had to have Blue Gal play this one a couple of times for me because I know that voice. That's Dennis Hopper.
That is Dennis Hopper. And you did. We edited this down a little bit. I played it for him several times. But he did eventually know. Oh, yeah, that's Dennis Hopper. Yes,
young Dennis Hopper, who was in all kinds of things. He was in Westerns. He was in, I think, Lost in Space, maybe.
He was young, he played the young, handsome
Yeah.
dude. I mean, you know, that was sort of his thing.
He was in True Grit. I mean, he really was in a whole shit ton of movies and a lot of TV shows, most of which I'll get wrong, but like Route 66 and a bunch of cowboy shows, a bunch of Westerns from that era. And yeah, that's a very young Dennis Hopper. I can't figure probably the early to mid 60s, but
yeah, it's 1966 and the movie is called Queen of Blood. Dogface Herman says, Dennis doesn't even try to save this clunky dialogue. No, he doesn't.
Yeah, I think he was a Disney star, wasn't he?
I think he got his start as a young troop player, you know, was sort of framed as a replacement for James Dean, you know, that kind of thing. Played troubled youth.
He did.
Okay, so number two, we are looking for the actress in this clip.
All right.
Take it easy. You need that juice, sweetie. It's keeping you alive.
What are you doing? Are we all right?
I'm not hurt, Rosie. Hart's back in Montreal waiting for you. I'm Lloyd. I'm a friend of yours.
Hart?
Hart's back in Montreal waiting for you.
I guess I was dreaming.
I don't think you were just dreaming. You and Hart were in a really spectacular motorcycle crash.
Crash?
Yes. You're bleeding right now. I'd better get Dr. Kelly.
Oh, no, don't go. I'm all right, really. I'm freezing cold. Oh, you're so warm.
Look, I better...
Hold me.
I have no friggin' idea. It sounds vaguely familiar, but, man, now I'm just... My brain is playing tricks on me trying to make voices I don't know sound familiar, but I have no idea.
This is Marilyn Chambers from Behind the Green Door. Ivory Snow. You said that. Ivory Snow.
That's right. Ivory Snow.
And she was also a 2004 vice presidential candidate.
What ticket?
I don't know.
Libertarian. I'm thinking.
Marilyn Chambers in the movie Rabid from 1977, which looks just awful.
Yeah.
It's a zombie vampire, you know, biting, lots of blood, lots of threats of biting and blood and so forth. So,
Okay.
All right. But she did make the transition from Ivory Snow to porn and then to mainstream horror movies. So,
well, okay. C grade, B grade drive-in horror movies. But still, she did it. She managed to do it.
Yeah. And her voice in this clip sounds very porno. I mean, she's able to sigh and moan with the best of them. All right. Who is the woman in this clip? This is number three.
True sense. Bad. Bad dog. Does your baby wavy recognize Lieutenant Jersey? See?
Just give us the tags, will you, Miss Poopin' Plots?
Are you authorized? Okay, what about her?
She is with me.
Oh, driver's license?
Hey, come on, will you? We don't have all night here.
Cool your jets, Jersey. None of our patients are going anywhere.
Oh, that's very distinctive. That's Phyllis Diller.
That's Phyllis Diller.
Ain't nobody sound like Phyllis Diller.
No, she was a one of a kind.
Can't figure out the year, though. I mean, because she was eternally Phyllis Diller.
She was old from the time she started her career,
yeah.
This is from 1991.
Jesus.
Uh-huh. And
Fang was long dead by then.
He was long dead by this time. The movie's called The Boneyard.
Uh-huh.
And we have another clip from The Boneyard. See if you can guess. I have, since there's so many actors in this clip, I will tell you, we are looking for, this is a scene where a morgue attendant is showing a policeman and a psychic, a female psychic,
Okay.
Some bodies, and we want to know who is playing the morgue attendant. This is in Boneyard.
All right.
Boneyard. All right.
Oh, Shep, you been here? I mean, don't you have a home to go to?
No. Dragon Lady won't let me. You know what I think? I think she's fattening us all up for Thanksgiving dinner.
Sure. Listen, I have a guest here with me. Miss Oates.
Allie Oates?
Yeah.
Shepherd. Willie Shepherd.
So how you been? You know, I haven't seen you for so long, I thought maybe you gave all this up.
I did.
So, what are you, coming out of retirement now?
Oh, sort of.
Hey! All right.
Shep, I want to show her the three kids here.
Huh? Haven't you seen these three stiffs enough?
Yes, I have.
You know what I think I ought to do? I think I ought to wrap them all up, and then you can take them home with you.
Jesus. God, that's such a standard voice. It sounds like Ernest Borgnine and Martin Balsam had a baby.
And they did, and his name was Norman Fell.
Mr. Ropa.
But you're exactly right. I mean, it is Ernest Borgnine having a baby. This is Norman Fell.
Oh, man, okay.
So, and he was in this with the Boneyard. It's, people's children getting turned into zombies. And
okay, so it's a video game movie.
1991. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it's a movie about iPhones. Yeah,
smartphones. No kidding. Uh-huh. Finally, number five.
Mr. Erskine, are you trying to tell me she's possessed?
I didn't say that, and I don't believe it. I do believe, though, that one person can dominate another one's mind. I feel that somebody, something, someone is transmitting signals to her. And these signals are causing Karen's condition.
Well, don't look at me.
Oh, yeah. No, come on. That's Spartacus. That's Tony Curtis.
That's Tony Curtis.
Tony goddamn Curtis.
1978. Yeah. This movie is called The Manitou, which is about a Native American spirit implanting some sort of embryo in a woman's neck.
Oh, man. Okay.
And, and as Dogface Herman said, Tony Curtis, poor bastard, he was in this movie.
Well, I liked him in the Harry Houdini biopic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you know my favorite Tony Curtis story?
Yeah, I do know about your favorite. Do you want to tell that? Because it is a funny story.
It involves Walter Matthau, I believe.
It was raining, right?
Raining. Is raining. And is there a sadder person, sadder looking hangdog person in the world than Walter Matthau? And this is a complete non sequitur story, but I heard Tony Curtis tell this, I believe, on the Tonight Show once upon a time.
Uh-huh.
And he's driving through the rain in his limo. He's arrived. He's a big star. And he's driving through New York because everyone lives in New York. And who does he see on the corner getting wet, looking sad? But his good friend, Walter Matthau. So he pulls up to the curb, rolls the window down, and says, "Hey, Walter. I fucked Yvonne DiCarlo."
I just fucked Yvonne DiCarlo.
And then rolls the window up and drives away. Because, you know, how can we hurt Walter Matthau even more than he's already been? What'll make him feel that much worse? Except I can't do the voice. The only people who can do Tony Curtis are Tony Curtis and Rich Little, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Oh, those were the days. When just anybody could fuck Yvonne DiCarlo, really.
She was hot.
She was hot. She really was.
Yeah, she really was. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Dogface Herman. This was actually fun.
I totally dig those kind of identify the voice kind of questions because they're challenging. Even though it's not my genre.
And people that we are familiar with turn up in weird places, and that's fun. So,
well, I really assumed when I heard the category title, Adrienne Barbeau would show up somewhere.
Absolutely, she was in all of them.
She was. She was. But, so. That's, thank you, Dogface Herman.
That kind of would have made it too easy to have Adrienne Barbeau.
It's like Dwight Eisenhower in Trivial Pursuit. It's pretty much
it's
the answer to every
Dwight
question.
Eisenhower. All right. Thank you, Dogface Herman. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Class.
Love you, baby. Bye.
Bye.